Hello from Midori House in London and welcome to a very special outdoor Sunday brunch live here on Monocle 24. This is Emma Nelson and a very warm welcome to the programme. Coming up, we're live from the Monocle Christmas Market in London with lots of voices from Midori House, both new and familiar.
In this turbulent world, quite many children are asking happiness and health for their parents. And I think that's very good.
Coming up, we hear from the stallholders, including glass manufacturers, lavender farmers, and the people manning the petting zoo. That's all to come this hour live from London with me, Emma Nelson, on Monocle 24. Blustery, but open and full of good Christmas cheer. The Monocle Christmas Market 2018, day two of two, is now officially open. Come down, wear your woolies, wear something a little bit waterproof, but it should be glorious. We've got beautiful stalls for you to come and have a look at. Father Christmas is here, and some really rather feisty reindeer arrived about 10 minutes ago. They threatened to join in quite vigorously in with the broadcasting, but we managed to get them into the pen just in time. There's lots of wonderful things to enjoy, and we'll in the next hour be talking a little to some of the people who have made the long journey for some to Midori House to set up their stall and to meet and greet all the people, and preferably, hopefully, make a few people's Christmases better. Now, one person has come over all the way from Milan. It's Jay Vasugi. He's from R&D Lab. There are stall holders here at the Monocle Christmas Market, but he's taken time out from ordering a very beautiful and elegant stall to come and talk to us here on Sunday brunch. A lovely welcome to you, Jay. Thank you for coming.
Thanks to you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wrapped up warm in some wool.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, what's it like? Is this your first time here at R&D, the Monocle
Christmas Market? This is our first time, actually.
And how are you finding it?
We're loving it. We're really enjoying it because we get a chance to actually connect to the consumer and really get direct feedback. For us, it's a lovely event, and also obviously there's this beautiful synergy with Monocle, and I think from a brand we feel that we're very much in line, so the crowd is perfect. Couldn't ask for more.
The crowd is perfect, and the things that you've chosen to bring along to share with us today, the items that you've brought to the Monocle Christmas Market, how did you go about choosing what they are, and in fact could you describe what you're selling?
Well, you know, we've brought two of our current projects. One is the mouth-blown glassware that's made entirely by hand in Marostica in Italy, and we also brought our woven textile blankets that are woven for us by a historical mill in Folina, again in Italy, both in the Veneto region. So we felt that this was the best presentation to have with us here at the collection.
I must confess, before you don't need this, but before anybody arrived and I was having a quick sneak peek around the fair, I actually did make a beeline for your stall, and I found myself staring at one of your glasses
picking it up. This is a great compliment. Thank you very much.
It's an absolute pleasure. They're absolutely beautiful and very thoughtful and well thought out products. How do you go about making sure that your design is perfect, your sources are perfect, the big jobs?
This is a big part of what we do, actually. We work both hand in hand. One issue for us, the most important issue for us, is to develop and build product that's sustainable. Not only sustainable from an ecological standpoint, but sustainable from a design standpoint, something that you would consider to be a keepsake and you would love to have for now and forever. Yet product that's very easy and comfortable to use for everyday life, what we consider to be everyday or little luxuries of life. I set off to do this project really basically because I wanted to develop a product for us, for our life, my wife and I, and I think we've been able to achieve this. The big challenge, obviously, is to come up with the design ideas, and this has been, obviously, my background being from fashion, I brought a lot of that into this mix.
Because you're not a designer, you know, a textile or household designer by trade, are you? You started off in menswear.
No, I'm a fashion, menswear fashion designer. So actually I'm coming in from the fashion side. And I think making this transition has been actually quite interesting and exciting for me, because it's sort of taking the thinking and the experience that I have and combining it with new challenges and enthusiasm. The point is that, you know, with fashion, we're always trying to do something, and then after 6 months, we're trying to reinvent it again and again. While in this kind of product, it's actually completely the opposite. So you work very, very hard to develop something, and then after it's developed, it has to stand the test of time, and this is a big challenge.
When you made that jump, what did you get right, and what surprised you along the way in terms of making that change from quick turnaround to lasting forever?
You know, it's the amount of time it takes on the planning and making the project. I think this is really what it boils down to. You know, in fashion, you know, we think and those development times are actually even getting shorter and shorter on the fashion side, because, you know, the retailers are asking to have much more product and much more deliveries. And so from sort of like the design table to the shop floor, the timing is being challenged and being shortened and shortened. Well, in the design product or in let's say in the home or field, what you find is that it takes a longer period of time for development. So actually something that would take maybe a year or 2 years to develop. The bigger the project, the bigger the product, like chairs or seats, these kinds of things, even taking a longer period. So there's a lot more of development period that goes into it. And this has been actually really interesting for me.
Did you have to sort of like pop massively put on the brakes and go, come on Jay, slow down,
you know,
just and your wife sitting you down going, you can take your time with this one now, you can enjoy it, you can relish you can relish getting it wrong.
You know, the tendency for me is there to have, you know, overdevelop, overdesign. This is because it's fashion. You know, coming from fashion, you always have this sense that you have to have more and more and more, just, you know, a new and every time new. So this has been actually a challenge, but something that, you know, I think there's something, a challenge, but it brings it in the middle as well, because I think that input coming in from fashion also creates new excitement as well. So
tell us a little bit more, though.
Being an outsider, let's say.
It's quite good. Were you given a warm welcome when you jumped into design? Because obviously you're having to leave fashion, which is your natural stable. You've been going at 100 miles an hour for goodness knows how long. And then you're now trying to break into a completely different market.
You're right. This is an obvious thing. I think the naivete is always, how do they say, bliss. But, you know, I have to say that, you know, we're kind of playing both ends to the middle, right? So we have a lot of great connections and great relationships with the fashion world that have been very supportive of the project. You know, and on the other hand, I think the more specialized product design stores are also very curious about it, because it's something that's sort of outside, an outsider approach, let's say.
And the fact is, you source all your materials and all your design in Veneto. What is it about that area of part of the world? Yeah. How did you find them?
Well, you know, this is a big part of what we do, because I think in today's world, we saw it in fashion with fast fashion, and now we're seeing it in design with fast design. There's many brands that are making beautiful things, but the product quality and the manufacturing really isn't there. So they're trying to hit price points with amazing design, not really putting in a lot of great product. And that's, you know, very disappointing, because you buy the product, you love it, you take it home, and after a short period of time, doesn't really meet your needs, right?
You mean it falls apart?
Falls apart. I didn't want it to be nicer, but okay. Our project is completely the opposite of that, because the way we look at it is that, okay, design is a huge part of it, and that's the reason, it's the first thing you see. But the thing that sustains it is how well it's made. So we seek out small traditional manufacturers and artisans to develop our product. And these are people that have generations. Like, for example, our glassware is made by a family that's three generations. The textile mill that we selected to develop our blankets, it's been in the same family since 1795. So, and sort of pre-war and post-war, they were specialized in making blankets. So that's why we chose them. So we really go to people that have the expertise in their field and in their product.
It's astonishing that when you read about Italy and the way that it is operating at the moment, it is always a story of financial chaos, uncertainty, destabilization, and yet you're saying that there are little businesses which are able to sustain and develop and grow in a way that perhaps in other countries, dare I say, like the United Kingdom, they don't have that anymore.
It's a cultural thing, I think. You know, I think you see this from a cultural standpoint, because the reality is that, you know, you have people that have you know, their lives and generations invested in making these kinds of product. I mean, when, you know, and I think this is a part of the reason why the product is great, is because they put themselves into the product. I mean, they come to us, you know particularly in our case, you know, when we're starting with a new idea and we may not have the full gamut of experience of going through the process, you know, we have to rely on people that actually know how to make the stuff, because if they don't, then you know, no one's going to have the solution here, right?
So if you had some advice to someone who's going into design in Italy, what would you suggest? What would be the advice you would give him? Because there are so many small manufacturers and so many designers and so many startups, but the longevity bit is where the bite really happens, isn't it?
You know, they can't scale up. You know, I mean, there are companies that do scale up. There are many, they are very successful. particularly on the design and the furniture side. But you're right about that. The scaling up scenario is, I guess, my background in education from the United States helps me a lot. But, you know, this is a challenge. But at the same time, you have to take advantage of what their strength is. And their strength is really, really understanding the product and really caring about making what they make. I mean, I have to tell you, the process of sitting down with them and discussing and having them really, you know, you see it in their eyes. They're like involved in the process. You know, I've worked in fashion, of course. I've worked in other parts of the world. And, you know, you meet the company owner and, you know, he has no connection to the product. Well, these people, you know, they grew up on the floor. So they, you know, they have their hands in the product.
They live it and they breathe it. And young people coming into the job. Are there enough young people coming in to make sure that that woolen mill that's been there since 1795 will be here until 2395?
You know, in our case, you know, we're lucky because both the companies are being run by the generations that are, you know, in the best period of their lives. You know, so for example, who makes our glassware, their brother and sister that own the company, and they're sort of, I think, in their 40s and 50s. In the case of the woolen mill, it's the same. The CEO is a young man who's actually really forward-thinking. So, you know, we're lucky that we have this in this case. I don't know about the rest of the world, and I think that's a challenge everywhere, right? So, you know, what's the next prime generation?
And finally, have you had a chance to wander around the market? And what's going in your back to take home?
I have. It's amazing. This is really a beautiful market. It's just so curated beautifully. The brands are also sit together so beautifully. Monocle has done such an amazing job. It's so festive and it's so great for the kids, and the food is fantastic. So, you know, this is always a challenge when you come to the UK, right?
Are you going to spend what you've earned today, Jay?
I think we're going to do some damage. That's for sure.
Jay Vasuji from R&D Lab. Just quickly tell people where you can be found if you're staggering around the market with a Glühwein in your hand and a sausage in the other.
We are right. We have an amazing location. We're right next to the Monocle shop. So. Inside.
Who did you have to talk to get that one?
You know, we're just so happy to be involved and working so closely with Monocle. Amazing organization.
Jay Vasuji, a man who makes things happen. Thank you very much indeed for joining
Thank
us
you.
On Monocle 24.
Jay's
stall R&D Lab is at the back on the right hand side when you go into the kitchen. There you go. You've been given the guidance. Come along down to the Monocle Christmas Market 2018 with me, Emma Nelson, doing Sunday brunch live outside where the reindeer are giving me the evil eye again.
See that man sitting opposite you on the subway, lost in another world? Or that smart woman scribbling notes while having her flat white? Well, here's what links them. They're both listening to Monocle 24 via our free radio app that simply and seamlessly lets you tune in live or download shows for later enjoyment. Just think, you too could be settling back enjoying cultural nourishment in the form of the Monocle Arts Review, being briefed on the world of business with the entrepreneurs, or just enjoying great music with the sessions at Midori House. Come on, download the Monocle 24 app today, stick on your headphones, and have informed fun on the go. Monocle 24, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
Here in London, we're outside at the Monocle Christmas Market. Emma Nelson here, bringing you Sunday brunch with a difference. The reindeer are still looking at me, and the reindeer have been a pretty solid and stable, pardon the pun, presence at the Monocle Christmas Market for years and years and years, as has our next guest, because it couldn't be a Christmas market without a little magic touch from Lapland. Father Christmas, Santa Claus, joined Monocle's Georgina Godwin and our editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, who began by asking, Father Christmas, what goes on in Lapland at this time of year?
There's lots to do. You can ride with the huskies, with the reindeers, with the snowmobile. You can do everything like that. And people love that. They want to come there and have fun.
And what kind of Lapland treats? So if I'm going down to breakfast in the morning, if maybe I'm coming around to your house, what kind of Lapland Finnish treats are we serving?
Finnish people are eating porridge quite a lot. Oatmeal porridge.
That's to start the day, hopefully.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Start for the day, yes. You were talking about breakfast,
yes.
So I started from there. And after that, we can eat everything there. And we have lots of different restaurants. For example, in Rovaniemi, at the Arctic Circle. Mm. So you can find your own food there, what you want to eat. So,
yeah. Now, could it be, and you know, you talked about that you can obviously see reindeer. Do reindeer also appear on the menu maybe as well?
Sometimes.
Those are the bad ones that are on the
menu? No, Tyler.
The good ones, the very good ones maybe are on the menu.
No, Tyler. As you know, you ask me this every time I'm here. That's something you want to do. You ask me, but you know, I eat mostly fish. Yeah, salmon is very good. But if people want to eat reindeer, it's okay.
Is the fish the secret of your beard? Because I really want to talk to you about beard care. Your beard is luxurious.
Oh, thank you very much. It takes a while every night. Those rolls every night.
Because it is very curly.
It is. I want it that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of conditioning, I imagine, goes into that.
Yes, sometimes. Sometimes, yes. It does. Yeah. It takes a little bit work, but I love it.
And do you have elf help?
No. Mrs. Claus helps me sometimes, yes. Mm-hmm. But quite often she says, do it yourself. Yeah.
Because you're quite self-sufficient in Finland. I am. I mean, you're known for being a self-sufficient people.
Yeah, I am. And we are.
Tell me, what are the... how have you had to staff up this year in terms of extra elves? I mean, are we talking hundreds? Have you hired thousands this year? What's sort of the labor market looking like in Lapland?
Quite many people are asking about the amount of elves. Mm. And the answer is always the same. Enough. Yes. Enough. Yeah. That's kind of a secret. You're always trying to ask me the secret.
You're with journalists here, so we try not to give you an easy ride, Santa,
And we're very concerned about elf welfare as well. I mean, what are the working conditions for the elves?
They're fine, of course. We take care of people there. We take care of the elves, of course. They have very good working places and they have lunch hours and they have breaks and everything.
Are they unionized?
That I don't know. I don't actually understand anything about that. But if they ask to do something, I say, let's do it. You can have your break now if you want.
Santa, you've been such a huge draw here at the Monaco Christmas Market, and you've had a stream of children coming in to see you. They're all queuing up to have their photographs taken with you. Tell us, have there been any incidents? Have they all been good?
They have. It's always the children who are good. And I have a very good thing to do with the children. If they ask, how can I be on the nice list? I always say, try to have fun every day so you don't have the time to be naughty.
I like that. That needs to be a t-shirt or something like that. Now, let's just talk about consumer trends for a moment. Where have you sort of seen the sort of gift requests moving this year, Santa? What are children interested in this year, maybe more than other years? Or is it quite stable, do you think?
It's quite stable, but do you know what? Unicorns this year. Yes. The toy ones, happily.
Okay, that's good.
The real ones, it's a bit tricky.
Yeah, they are tricky.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the entrepreneur startup.
not those kind of unicorns either. No.
No.
So there's that. Okay, so, you know, and we'll see if that sort of trend runs. What else? What else has been sort of on wish lists as well?
Do you know what? Something good is happening in the world, in this turbulent world. Because quite many children are asking happiness and health for their parents. And I think that's very good.
That's fabulous. Completely fabulous.
Yeah. And it has been the last year that has been like that.
And so do you think that this means a return of compassion amongst the younger generation?
Maybe, yeah. As I said, something good is happening. It may be compassion or something else, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, these children come to you from all over the world, and I understand that as Santa Claus, you have to be fluent in so many languages.
Je parle français un peu, oui, naturellement. Je parle svenska, det går också bra. Ja.
Auch ein bisschen Deutsch?
Oh, ein bisschen Deutsch, natürlich.
Okay, natürlich, super. Yeah. Santa, can you tell me, there's still a few weeks to run right now.
3 weeks, 23 days to be exact.
So, given that, does this mean that also it's a 24-hour-a-day operation? Like maybe I was thinking in the summertime you're fishing, you're doing other things, and really now is it almost round the clock up until Christmas?
It is. It's in shifts.
Oh, it's shifts, okay.
Yeah, with the elves.
Of course.
They're not working for 24 hours.
No.
I take care of them.
Three shifts of eight.
I take care of them. Yeah.
And Mrs. Claus, does she get a break?
Yes, of course. She likes to make cookies. Mm. Gingerbread cookies and everything like
Peppercocker.
that. Maybe.
And finally, Tyler, I mean, obviously Santa Claus is just the best definition, if you like, of soft power.
Oh, absolutely. I think that it's and I have to say, we have a lot of friends in Helsinki in the government, but I don't think that the government in Finland is actually using Santa Claus enough. I think that it's great, and you know, you put out this appearance starting sort of end of November, and you know, and young girls and boys around the world know that Santa's there all year round, of course. But I think that it would be very nice to see, you know, maybe you doing something at the embassy in Washington potentially in the summertime, and maybe showing up at some other places. And maybe we need to talk to the people in Parliament, and certainly at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Helsinki, because I think you're right, Georgina. I think you know, the world needs more Santa. I think.
Yep, I think that too. But do you know what? On Monday, I will be visiting two children's hospitals here in London, and one in Brighton on Tuesday. So it's already happening. But you can talk with them, of course. If you have wishes, you can tell them too.
Absolutely, I think it's a fantastic idea. Now, Sandy, you mentioned that. Any other appearance? I mean, obviously you've got your big gig is coming up in a few weeks. Are you anywhere else in the world? You know, in the coming sort of days and weeks as well.
All over the world,
really.
Yeah, all over Europe, all over the world. You can see me everywhere, and that's the magic of Christmas.
The magic of Christmas there, embodied by Santa Claus. He was talking to Tyler Brulé and Georgina Godwin yesterday on day one of the Monocle Christmas Market. You're listening to Sunday Brunch at day two. It's 10:23 here in London, and they're pouring through the gates here at the Monocle Christmas Market at Midori House in Marylebone. Come down if you are free. Come for a saffron bun and buy yourself a nice cosy rug too. It's brilliant fun. Now, we have some traditions here at Monocle 24, especially during Sunday brunch when we're broadcasting live outside. We talk to Santa Claus. We've just heard from him there. We get looked at in a slightly malevolent and vicious way by the reindeer. And always, always, always we have a visitation by the Lavender Fairy herself, Nancy Durham, all the way from Wales, coming down and soothing us with her unctions, her potions and her glorious voice, and making us all feel an awful lot better. And I'm delighted to say that Nancy Durham from Farmers is back behind the microphone. Lovely to see you, Nancy.
What an introduction. Lovely to be here amongst it's the
glorious
animals.
This is your
toddlers.
Animals, cashmere and toddlers. I mean, that's your average Sunday afternoon. And you're not normally surrounded by animals, cashmere and toddlers, are you? You're out in Wales with your wonderful farm. If, for one of the few mortals on earth who haven't met your glorious potions and unctions and lotions, tell us a little bit more about how you came about.
Well,
or how Farmers came about.
Well, I just tell that yesterday.
Oh, right.
But, you know, you just tell them again, and tell them while you're telling them. It's just an accident. Journalist turned lavender farmer, 2003, planted some lavender, it grew. No plans of becoming a lavender, the Lavender Empire of Wales. And it just happened, and I got together with really lovely people who had ideas about what we should do with the lavender without me thinking we needed to do something with it.
How much lavender are we talking about when you first planted? I mean, because I think many of us will have had the odd window box full with, you know, peppered.
Yeah. Half an acre, maybe 2,000 plants. And
okay,
you know,
that's a lot,
but when you look at it in the field, you think that's a lot, but it's not that much. And then it grows and you cut it for bunches just for fun in that very first year and subsequent years. And you cannot imagine how many bunches it made. We were hanging them everywhere, you know, in the barn, out in different barns, in the house. Everywhere we could find a place to hang them to dry, and it was absolutely glorious. But I realized I had a heck of a lot of lavender.
So, and then the decision was made, we have to do something with this lavender. And then how do you go about turning it into what you sell now?
The wonderful Helen Lowe in North Wales is a creator, designer of creams. She's so talented. She's been making creams for years. And her sister, who got to know me because of our lavender growing, put us together, and Helen experimented with our lavender oil and came up with a line of creams for women, which we played around with for a couple of years, until I had an aha moment about farmers' hand cream after giving a talk to a group of farmers in Wales they were putting on my women's creams on their hands and faces and saying, look, now my hands don't smell like silage. And I thought, oh, well, I could save their hands. So Farmer's Hand Cream was my idea, inspired by them.
From very humble beginnings.
But I thought I would be fixing farmers' hands. But Tyler Boulay helped me understand that probably this wasn't going to be for farmers. A few of them do buy it. But it's people, I think, who love the countryside, appreciate what we're doing, like to be part of that.
And it's lovely because you nip into places all over the place. I mean, if you go to Cardiff, if you go into the town hall, you can get farmers. If you go into Ludlow in Shropshire, you can get farmers. And if you go all over the world, these, I can't believe it, they were originally designed to soothe the silage smell. You get these things that are the absolute opposite to the problem that you're trying to fix, because it's luxurious and it's
But
it's
it would fix. It is very healing and nourishing, and it really would do the job. And it does. I mean, some farmers, and especially farmers' wives, will buy this to treat their husbands and to make them smell better and be nicer.
Their hands a little bit less like shovels.
How delicate.
And then it grew. The lavender grew. The acreage grew.
Yes.
The farmer's hand lotion grew. And now I looked at you and complimented you on your gloves, and you went, oh, it's something that we just designed at Farmers. This is a real empire that you've got running here.
It's a real, it's a lovely little mini empire. It's not an empire at all. But you know what, for markets, it's nice to bring a different offer each time. So these mitts are really, try one on. They're made by Fiona Evans in Wales. She's designed them and knit them.
You're not getting these back, because actually you have just answered the journalist, the outdoor broadcaster's ultimate problem on a cold day, which is you need to be able to use your fingers for the typing and the writing, and yet you need to keep the rest of your body warm. So unfortunately you're not getting this back.
Gosh. Well, I've got the other one here. Help! I'm going to ask for help to get that.
Not a chance.
I've got a whole basket full, if you'd
like. Okay, I'll come and steal your glove.
They did save me yesterday. It was very, very... It was quite bitter yesterday, in a way.
I mean, how much actually does the outdoors still in... What you make, is it inspired by the outdoors? That need to keep warm, that need to keep cosy, that need to keep soft and moisturised?
Everything. And my, you know, clever, creative friends have always kept me on track. You know, we started with hand cream, and then I said to a friend in New York, Karen Davidoff, what should we do next? And she said, ask the farmers. And I said, well, they're not really our, you know, main market. She said, ask them. They are your constant inspiration. And I did. And they gave me a resounding foot cream is the next thing to make. So we made foot after hand. And it is incredibly popular. We get just a close second to hand. So I just try to stay there in that tent with them, watching them, looking out, listening. And plus, they're great friends. I mean, we're all together in our valley. People think we live in an isolated spot, but in fact I see, you know, Robert and Gareth and Edward and Philip every day, going back and forth, and Penny and Ella. They are women farmers, so they're on our beat. I'm on their beat.
You've made an area of Wales, or of the world, which, although very beautiful to look at, can appear to the outside to be quite inhospitable. But no, the welcome in the valleys is wonderful.
Oh, absolutely wonderful. I mean, there's no question. And we've been there for a very long time. My husband bought our farm when it was derelict in 1974, and the neighbours helped him build it so that somebody could move in and live there. No, we fit right in. And maybe, you know, we're Canadians, so we're fellow colonized peoples, perhaps that's something. But no, it's a very hospitable part of the world. And also quite outward looking. You know, it's not all sort of in the valley.
What do you mean by outward looking?
They do, they travel. When I traveled as a journalist, whenever I would go, I covered Yugoslavia, the breakup of it, for years. And when I would come back, people would gather around and I'd tell them what I saw, what I heard. They got it on the news, but they wanted to have the first-hand news. And back in that day, those farmers identified with a lot of the farmers who were turfed out of their farms and sent from Croatia to Serbia or Serbia to Croatia. Like ethnic cleansing, they could kind of get it, even though the potential for that didn't seem to exist where they live. But they could imagine leaving your farm forever on your tractor, never to return.
And what's it like now? I mean, we don't want to sort of be too negative about this, but these are quite uncertain times. And financially, we're looking ahead to a world that we can't really guess much about. And when you're talking to the farmers in the valleys, what are they thinking about? What's on their minds?
Well, now I might just have to sound like I'm... what's the word, two-faced or something. I'm a bit worried because a lot of them did vote for Brexit. So we don't kind of hang around talking about it. I don't know how uncertain they are. I mean, there's definitely a feeling amongst farmers that, the subsidies are going to stop and life's going to change. And, you know, we did have it pretty good. But there is a discomfort. And I know that's at odds with my saying they're outward looking, because Brexit is this kind of the opposite, right?
It's a closing down. Yeah. But what you're making sure, though, is you're the empire. I know it's not an empire in your world, but it is an empire if you've never been a lavender farmer. You're now branching out into doing hospitality as well, but not any kind of hospitality. You're going to put people in a van.
No weddings. Nothing like that.
You only need two people for a wedding, Nancy.
We had a wreck of a removals van. And it's large and green and peeling, but the name's still on it, beautifully written, Rutter Haulage and Removals Van. And it's got a Luton, you know, the part that sticks out at the front of the truck. There's no wheels. And it's very large and lovely green on the outside. We've moved it from its sort of hiding place where the last farmer had left it and perched it above our swimming pond, which people love. Our swimming pond is like second to the lavender, maybe even beats the lavender for beauty and for swimming. So there's going to be a place for two people to stay, or possibly three if they get along in one space. But it's going to be absolutely luxurious inside, very smart. And talk about a room with a view. It's double glass doors looking out over our pond and down the valley in both directions, and that'll be available to stay in the new year.
How do you go about renovating a removals van?
I have a master builder called Roger Capps, who really knows what he's doing, and Dominic Brunston leads a group of builders from down the valley, and they just really know what they're doing, from plumbing to woodwork to windows, and they are masterful, and they're just helping us do it. So right now the insulation is in. Oh yeah, running water.
It's not a quick dash across the yard.
No, beautiful three-piece shower, toilet, sink, of course. And under the Luton, there's going to be a public loo for people who are visiting the farm. Now, we're really going up market, Emma. We can look after the public now when they visit. At the moment, they said there's loos in the house, of course, and they line up outside of my husband Bill's study. And he counts the money. And I said to Bill, we decided we would get one public toilet. This is before we knew we would turn the truck into a place to stay. And I got up my nerve and I said, you know what, I think we need two toilets. He said, you're telling me there's 12 people standing outside my study right now waiting to get in. So yeah, we're growing. And people love to come to us. We are at 1,100 feet with spectacular views in all directions. There's a lot to like about where I live.
And we talked about toilets instead. Let's talk a little bit more about the fact that you're not just opening for hospitality. We're not one to mention competitors very often here at Monocle 24, but I think we'll give you this space. You're having a market this week, a Christmas market.
First time.
I think it's because you're a four-hour drive from here. I don't think we'll hold it against you.
Thank you.
What are you doing?
I'm really probably inspired by this very market. It's eight makers, including ourselves, in a stone barn. We'll have beautiful music, lots of lights, lots of things to drink. We'll have sausages on the barbecue and sweet things. And it's, a potter and someone who collects vintage paintings and just very talented people. A wonderful baker who's going to do the, what do you call it? Pupper, the gingerbread, little gingerbread?
Pepper
cocking? Something like that.
Yeah, the lovely Swedish gingerbread.
Yeah. I'll have to ask. Slate will be there with their interiors.
I think Father Christmas is on his way, and he's an expert on those.
Well, if he can make a detour to us on Thursday, that would be great. Otherwise, I'm not sure about the Santa Claus appearance.
No, doesn't he sort of like have a bulk order in from you to arrive at Lapland around the 23rd?
Yeah. But if anybody happens to be in Mid Wales, LD23 Herbert Uniform, that's where the farm is. We're this Thursday, 12 to 7.
Don't rush all for
selling and baking.
Ladies and gentlemen, we do podcast this, so you can get Nancy's address. You can find out where Nancy Durham lives just by listening back on the podcast. We'll be doing this a little bit later. But Nancy, I'm going to let you get back to your stall, because it is getting super busy here at the Monocle Christmas Market. And I'll be coming around to give you back the gloves and have a slather of hand cream a little later. That was Nancy Durham from Farmers. You're listening to Monocle 24. It's Sunday Brunch live from the Monocle Christmas Market. And a very warm welcome back to a very special edition of Sunday Brunch. It's Emma Nelson here live from the Monocle Christmas Market. We've got loads of treats still ahead. But first, let's hear from one of our favourite bits of the Christmas market. Every year we have the petting zoo. We usually have reindeers. In fact, we saw them charge past quite literally a few minutes ago, settling down. They're a little bit more docile now. They have a mouthful of straw to keep themselves busy. But yesterday we had a few other furry friends who are keeping us happy. Jess Chatfield is from the Mini Farm Petting Zoo that provided the animals. She spoke to Georgina Godwin yesterday, and she began by telling Georgina about her donkey.
He used to be a beach donkey before this, but now he's in his retirement. He's 22, so he's been doing a beach donkey for quite a long time, so now it's just time to put his feet up and relax. He likes all the fuss and attention that he gets when he comes out.
Well, he's so gentle. I was just having a little cuddle with him earlier and he seemed to be really enjoying it.
Yeah, he's really laid back, really relaxed. He's really, really nice natured and he just wants to be with you all the time.
Oh, how sweet. And what else do we have here today?
We've got two pygmy goats. Their mother and daughter, and then we've also got two lambs as well.
Tell us about pygmy goats. I'm not quite sure I know what a pygmy goat is.
They're just a smaller breed of goat, that's all really. They're very inquisitive, they want to be doing everything that you're doing, they're into everything, especially when there's food around. They want to be where you are because there's food there.
Mm-hmm. With my experience of goats before, they do eat everything.
They'll try and eat everything. If they can't eat it, they'll still try. And they can climb, they can jump out, they can balance on such small things. They're amazing really on how they can get around.
Although they're quite safely contained here.
And
then the lambs.
Yes, we've got Lucy and Larry, two lambs. They're 9 months old now, but still very fluffy because of the winter, so they've got a nice woolly coat, but that'll get longer and they'll get bigger as well.
So what happens to these animals when they are not travelling around?
They just go out in the field. When they're back at home, they just go out in the field. The goats around the yard because they like to be with you and into everything that you're doing, whereas the lambs spend a lot more time with the other sheep, and they just as soon as they see you though, they want to be with you. The two lambs are hand reared, so they don't know if they're humans or sheep.
Oh, that's so sweet. And you don't have any problems? They're always very friendly with children. They don't mind the sort of excessive petting and
they do like it. The goats and the sheep, because they can't reach and itch their back, they really like a scratch and a stroke, because it's just like giving them a massage, you know, an itch that you can't scratch.
Well, they're all terribly sweet, aren't they? So are they very busy at this time of year, or is it a constant thing?
No, it's quieter at this time of the year. Our busy time is spring, you know, Easter and summer times, really.
When they're little tiny babies.
They still come out once they get older, because they just love it. They want to be with you and they want the attention. They're used to it, you know. They're used to the attention, so they want it all the time.
Yeah. What other animals do you have in your mini farm?
We've got rabbits, chickens, pigs. Pigs are brilliant. They love all the attention. We've got Shetland ponies, llamas, ducks, turkeys, all sorts, guinea pigs.
Yeah, turkeys, that's a bit of a sensitive subject at this time of year.
I know. They're definitely not for Christmas, though. They're too nice. They're too friendly.
So if people come down to the fair, they can actually pet these animals,
yes,
can't they?
Yes, of course they can. Yes, they love it. They love being scratched. They love being stroked. They like the attention.
Don't we all? That was Jess Chadfield talking lambs, turkeys and pigs. Today we have reindeer, ladies and gentlemen. Reindeer. And they are absolutely gorgeous. Magnificent creatures. Come down and have a stroke. You're listening to Monocle 24. It's Emma Nelson here with Sunday Brunch. And now those of our subscribers with keen eyes will have noticed a French menswear brand getting a lot of love on the pages of our magazine. A staple of even our editor-in-chief's wardrobe, the Bonne Facture clothes, are made with hand-picked fabrics, trimmings, and all from beautiful ateliers. They also have a stall this week at our market. And Deborah Newberg from the Bonne Facture spoke to Monocle's editor-in-chief Tyler Brulé and Georgina Godwin.
When I started the Bonne Facture, I was set out to create a line of essentials, menswear essentials, that were very high quality and also connected to the makers, connected to the atelier. And regarding to the market position, something that's not really in the contemporary range, but not really in the luxury or the fashion range, but more like something in slow fashion, I guess. That's between those two ranges, and just give people very good quality value and also durability, sustainability, something that lasts in time.
Just having a look at everything that you have here today at the Christmas market, and speaking to your assistant, every single piece there is storied. Everything has a narrative behind it. For instance, tell us about the incredible shirts that I was looking at.
Oh, thank you. There are shirts. We have our patterns don't change a lot. So we have a shirt pattern that is our shirt, our essential shirt, and then we change it every season with different fabrics. So this is we have a button-down shirt there that I think you saw in Japanese cotton flannel from this very, very good mill specialized in shirting fabrics in Japan. The buttons are real horn. They come from a place in Jura called Brochot. They're a family-owned manufacturer since 1958 of buttons. And the maker is Confection du Bois Chaunard in Mayenne, in the northwest of France. So, you know, 7 stitches per centimeter, felt seams, all of the high-quality shirting details.
It's quite remarkable what you do, and I think this is one of the points of attraction for us, because you see a lot of companies which are in the business of course, mass manufacturing, and they want to talk about traceability, they want to talk about sustainability. What's interesting, in the luxury goods business, it's quite rare that brands, companies, reveal their sources. They want to keep their manufacturers yes. top secret. So what gave you the confidence to say that it was, you wanted to go to market and actually put very visibly on the label who you're partnering with?
Well, first of all, people thought I was crazy for doing this. They weren't yet.
No, sure.
But actually, I started working at Hermès initially, and they were working with beautiful makers and ateliers. And that really inspired me to think that the people who actually make the clothes are as part of the clothes as the person designing it. That there is a whole chain of value there that needs to be, you know, shown more. So I felt very strongly about that. And then I went working in China for a big French retail chain, doing more like mass market underwear. And I saw things there that I really didn't like. And that really gave me the rage, I'd say. That, you know, I didn't care what people thought or not. I was like, this is right. And I want to change the way people give value to a piece of clothing. And instead of just, you know, kind of idealizing a designer, more like give worth to all the steps and the making especially. So that's what really gave me the confidence to do it.
Just looking at a pair of gloves there, I understand that that's made by the same company that makes the French cavalry.
Yes, exactly. They're a company called Agnel. They're very famous. They're around Saint-Junien in the region of Millau, where all the French glove companies, glove makers are historically. And they work with a lot of very high fashion companies, like all the big maisons. But they are also manufacturing les gants Saumur, which are the French cavalry gloves. And they're very specific because actually the flower of the leather is inside. So when you put your hand inside it, it's extremely soft inside, and it has a suede part outside. So it's the most luxurious thing that you have inside instead of being outside.
I'm sold. I'm going to be over the table. I mean, and I think that's always the amazing thing, I think, about doing what we do, Georgina, in audio, is that if you can go and explain something without seeing it and make it sound as luxurious as you have, then I think we're on to something good.
Totally, totally. But all of it, the feel of all of it, the look of all of it, and it does feel like this very understated luxury. You're not shouting, are you?
I don't really like shouting, and I'm also looking to do something that will wear well in time, you know, quality-wise, but also style-wise, something that, you know, hopefully people won't get tired of. And so that's what also calls for it to be more understated and less like seasonal. Or we do have seasonal, we have novelty items, but, you know, everything has to blend in so that you wouldn't really know what season it was from, but, you know, yeah. That's my approach.
I was going to say, though, I mean, maybe perhaps the wearer wouldn't get tired of it, but I think probably people around them might get tired of the wearer in the same jacket so often, because it's an architect's jacket. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's based on the French work jacket, yeah. But it's more tailored, so we called it the architect jacket, because a lot of Parisians wear this kind of jacket.
Yeah, and again, it's just something which, I mean, I haven't worn it because it's probably linen cotton or something indestructible, but it has a few miles on it already with it. But you just see that it's something you would never, ever get rid of. There's no reason to, no?
Hopefully.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully. But also, you know, we started this editorial project called Patina, and that I would love to invite you to participate in, where people that we know or that I like talk about a piece of clothing they have worn for a long time, that even have marks of use, and explain to us the story of that piece. It doesn't have to be the bonne facture. It can be anything, like a pair of glasses, a pair of shoes, you know, a coat. Daphne participated in that with her mother's Loden coat. And it's all about cherishing the marks of use and, you know, giving value to what we actually wear on our skins and, you know, live with as garments, instead of, you know, seeing that as a fashion item and something that you have to replace, more like seeing it like something you can keep and you can use, and that's beautiful.
Mm. What's your favorite piece from Deborah's range?
Well, you mentioned the word loden, and you've done a loden-toned corduroy jacket. It's the architect's jacket for autumn, which I'd probably say is probably one of my favorite pieces. And then there was a blazer, which is kind of a tone-on-tone navy seersucker-ish, I would say.
Yes.
It must be a Japanese fabric, I would imagine, which was from, again, something from summer before last. And it's just... it's always in my bag when I go anywhere. Well, not even somewhere tropical, just somewhere reasonably warm.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Deborah, if people can't get down here today, where can they find you normally?
So they can find us in Paris in our showroom, of course, upon appointment. We are starting a pop-up shop in Paris in République, in the République area, for all of the Christmas time, from next week to Christmas. And then we have retailers. We have trunk clothiers here that we really enjoy working with.
Zurich 2 now.
Zurich 2, exactly. We have Union Made in the US. We have several retailers in Japan, like Maiden Shop, Korea. Yeah, we're...
And in e-commerce?
And e-commerce. We have our own e-commerce, and we're also working with Mr. Porter and MatchesFashion.com.
And that was Deborah Newberg from De Bonne Facture speaking to Tyler Brulé and Georgina Godwin. You're at the Monocle Christmas Market with us in the flesh. Dog meets reindeer. If you hear any noises, that's what's happening. You're listening to Monocle 24. Welcome back to, well, it should be Studio One, but it's actually Car Park One, right next to the reindeer. We have a ringside seat, ladies and gentlemen, at the Monocle Christmas Market. Mano Chan is just doing his initial rounds. I say it's a he, I've never really checked. A couple of kids have been embraced by the big owl. There are dogs wandering around, bells ringing. The spirit of Christmas is infused in the air. And some great friends are here once again. For years and years, we're beginning to see the same people coming around selling very beautiful things, and one of them is Adam Cameron from the Workers' Club. Adam, it is a bare year since you were sitting around the table here outside next to the reindeer stall, and back you are with beautiful things from the Workers' Club. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
How are you finding it this year?
Good. Really good. Really nice to be back, and quite nice. We're inside this year, so it kind of feels like a change of scene for us.
You're up to Club Class Plus now.
We are, yeah, in the luxury.
Tell us a little bit more about the Workers' Club. I mean, if you haven't had a chance to come down to the market, or you haven't bought anything of yours before, how did you come about?
So me and my wife founded the Workers' Club about 3 years ago. We both been in the industry for about 20 years, designing for different kind of brands. I've always worked for kind of luxury men's brands, like Burberry, Dunhill, Dax, people like that. Charlotte's background was quite different. She was kind of high street background. And we've always wanted to do our own brand, pretty much from college, really. So it's been kind of gestating for a long, long time. About three, 4 years ago, we decided to take the plunge and do it for ourselves after doing it for everyone else for so long.
What was that like?
It was scary. It was liberating and scary, I suppose, in equal measure, because, you know, suddenly no one is kind of telling you what you can and can't do, but at the same time you're kind of, you know, you're completely sort of out there, you know, exposed to the elements and, you know, having to really stand by what you're doing.
And you're trying to find a market as well. I mean, obviously you will know people inside out at within fashion, but
yeah,
the idea of coming to say, actually, I'm not part of a big brand anymore.
Yeah.
I've got something to say. How did you go about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we always knew, I think, again, from being in the industry for a while, we always knew to have longevity, we needed to have our own sort of USP, I suppose. And we had an idea of what we wanted to do, and we felt quite strongly about it. So we really just had to kind of get behind that message.
What was it? What was it that you decided?
Well, I mean, our like motto is buy less but better. So basically, we see ourselves as being sort of anti-fashion. So we're an anti-fashion brand in terms of we're not a trend-focused brand. We believe that people should buy fewer things but make more sort of informed purchases. And I think, you know, given the way things are with, you know, rising levels of plastic waste and just generally, you know, lots of waste and people just being more conscious about making informed purchases, I suppose.
This has been the big year for that, hasn't
it? It really has.
In the last 12 months since we've spoken, we have had, like you say, the plastics in the oceans issue, the issue of the amount of water that's required to make make clothing. Have you found that the focus has now moved towards you as a result? You've been able to actually make your mark because of these concerns?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think when people, for us really, you know, the benchmark of what we do is quality. And that's why, you know, coming to somewhere like the Monocle Market is really key, because people that come and touch and feel our products, they immediately understand, you know, why it costs what it costs. So, you know, you could argue, oh, £20-25 for a pair of socks, that's a lot of money. But when you feel it and then you realise, you know, it's made in Scotland in a small workshop, it's the best sock you'll ever own, it will last 10 times longer than, you know, not name-checking, you know, other brands, but, you know, it's really, the proof is in the pudding, I suppose.
Adam Cameron, the man who will sell you the best sock you've ever owned.
Definitely the best sock.
Come and find him. And TWC, the Workers' Club, at the Monocle Christmas Market. That's all we have time for this special edition of Sunday Brunch. Thanks to our producer, George McDonough, and studio manager, George and Sarah Miles. Our researcher was Mariana Lagrasta. Make sure you join us next week, live from Zurich, as we host a Christmas market in that city. But we finish with a Santa Lucia choir singing We Wish You a Merry Christmas. From me, Emma Nelson, it's goodbye. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend wherever you are.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your King. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your King. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy